The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
A lot of folks says, look, I just don't like your vaccine mandates and I donated to this. Now it's illegal. Should I be worried that the bank can freeze my account? What's your answer to that?
Well, I think if you are a member of a pro-Trump movement who's donating hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars to this kind of thing, then you ought to be worried.
Trump! These are Canadians. It's a Canadian journalist. And he's talking to, who is this? This is the Justice Minister, David Lametti. And he's blaming it on Trump, evidently. I guess the truckers moving across Canada, ordinary Canadians that are demanding an end to the vaccine mandates. Trump is responsible for this? Donald Trump takes credit for creating the vaccine. Donald Trump is the one who's saying everyone should get vaccinated. But you see, it's quite revealing, isn't it? They say the silent part out loud every now and again, and then you see the political motivations that are driving all of this nonsense. Of course it's politics. They're debating it in Parliament even right now as we speak. And COVID's not part of the debate. The debate is over the movement, the truckers, the swastikas. It's politics. It's war. It's political war. It's propaganda war, as I covered yesterday. And it's building to outright war, war in the streets. That's what your Bible prophesies. I mean, they're sobering prophecies in Ezekiel 4 and 5, but we've got to begin to wrap our minds around it. Nobody wants it. We certainly don't want to see that happen to our nations. Even the prophets of old lamented, why will you die? Why won't you just turn to God and God's servant, God's work? So many troubles. It's 2 Timothy 3, isn't it? In the last days, dangerous times would come upon us. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. Goes right into 11 million homes all across America. To get to the live video stream, however, you have to go to our very own website. We offer it exclusively at thetrumpet.com. Thetrumpet.com every day at this time. You've got a nice big banner at the top of our homepage. Takes you right to the live stream page, thetrumpet.com/live. And you can get to the live stream page and also to some of the podcasts that we post after the fact if you need to catch up on demand. As I say, every now and again, they say the silent part out loud. What does Donald Trump have to do with ordinary Canadian citizens asking their government to stop with these mandates? And yet, he gets quite a few mentions in Canada, in New Zealand. We'll see that here in just a moment. It's not about COVID anymore, is it? You know what's interesting, really, when you step back, speaking of prophecy, like we just mentioned in Ezekiel 4 and 5, other prophecies that are factoring in so prominently, and you see it now every day, other prophecies factoring into just about everything we're seeing in the nations of Israel, and that would be the United States, that would be Great Britain, that would be Canada, that would be New Zealand, that would be Australia, is you see these prophecies regarding Jeroboam, an end-time Jeroboam. As many of you viewers and listeners know and understand, we're in the Jeroboam end. Donald Trump is coming back to power. But there's also another prophecy, the prophecy of Antiochus. And these two war against each other. These two administrations war against each other. And it's not just in the United States, as I said. As I said, it's also in Canada. It's also in New Zealand. Look at the influence Barack Obama had on the royal family of Britain. I mean, he had a hand, really, in breaking that family apart. as close as he and Michelle Obama were to, or are, to Harry and Meghan, yeah, go it alone. You call your own shots. You don't need that old royal family. Barack Obama, he was certainly instrumental. His team, anyway, was certainly instrumental in Justin Trudeau's political campaign the first time he was voted in as prime minister. The second time around, I think it was more by some nefarious activity, cheating, as communists are wont to do. But here's Obama. He is tight. The Obama people, they're tight with the Trudeau people. It's Obama that wanted this Emergencies Act in place. It's Obama who's behind what's happening in Trudeau's government right now, for sure. And then you've got this justice minister saying, hey, we've got to freeze financial accounts because some of the people sending help to truckers, they're Trump supporters. It's Donald Trump. He's behind the movement. So they've got to stamp it out, don't they? Listen to this insane comment from an MSNBC commentator just yesterday, clip 10.
It's really, we really are, and we are on the precipice. If we don't get this right this time, we don't get this right this time, it's over. You put McCarthy back in, you put Trump back in, our democracy is over. I'm not overstating it. That's where we're at.
He's not overstating it? If Trump gets back in, it's over? Democracy's over? If a majority of Americans vote for Donald Trump and he returns to power, it's over? It's over? What's over? The nation, I guess. The democracy is dying. You hear these kinds of insane statements from these radicals all the time. And as I say, it's not limited to the United States alone. Trump, it's Trump behind the movement, the truckers in Canada. It's Trump that's destroying democracy. Today, as I said, they're debating in Parliament this use of the Emergencies Act that Trudeau invoked on Monday, first time ever in history. I mean, there's the War Acts of 1970 and a couple of other instances, but as this Emergency Act has been drawn up back in the 1980s, I believe, this is the first time it's ever been used. Martial law, wartime powers, and for what? Because they've got some of these bouncy houses in downtown Ottawa? They're doing everything they can to try to create false flags. You may have heard about this store of ammunition and guns at the Coutts border crossing. And, of course, authorities now come to find out they're not really associated with the truckers' movement at all, the Freedom Convoy. So there are the communists always looking. The Canadian Ray Epps, he's somewhere to be found. There's probably multiple versions of Ray Epps right now in Ottawa, in Coutts, wherever else. As they want it, they're talking about swastikas and Hitler after all. So they want it to be violent. They want it to be violent. Because this justifies their crackdown. And so even when they're in, the children are bouncing away. And the little games for children or the potlucks are going on or the dancing in the streets. Justin Trudeau, the prime minister, doesn't faze him at all. He gets up in front of the microphone and says, "You're siding with the swastikas." Listen to this from Justin Trudeau's Minister of Public Safety. He's concerned about the public safety. This is clip 2.
And the invocation of the Emergencies Act and the declaration that follows with it sends a very powerful message and hopefully a deterrent to rational and fair-minded individuals who may think that they're just participating in a peaceful protest, but are actually now commingled with something that is much more nefarious.
They're mingling with something very, very nefarious. It's an ominous movement. I mean, some of these people supported Donald Trump, after all. The CBC in Canada, this is basically the state-run media, why the word freedom is such a useful rallying cry for protesters. So I guess freedom, it's a rallying cry, but you know, this is really not such a good thing, this quest for freedom. So says the CBC in Canada. Listen to this. It says the word has become common among far-right groups. You see, it's the Nazis. They keep carrying on about freedom. It's very dangerous. It's nefarious. The word has become common among far-right groups, experts say, as demonstrations against COVID-19 restrictions continue across Canada. The word freedom is on the lips and placards of many protesters. I guess that's a bad thing. They want freedom. How dare they want freedom? It's also a term that has thrived among far-right groups, said Perry, one of a number of experts who say the presence of far-right groups in Canada is growing. It's the same. It's right out of the Joe Bama playbook. This is the greatest threat facing Canada. White supremacy. Far-right groups. Those who side with the swastikas. And strangely, the Nazis are the ones that want freedom. And so they've got to analyze even the meaning. It's so Orwellian. We just talked yesterday about the word spying. Well, did they spy? Did Hillary's people spy on Donald Trump? It just kind of, it depends on how you define spying. To see the word freedom bandied about as part of these protests points to a broader circulation of what Elizabeth Anker calls violent forms of freedom. Have you heard of this? Violent forms of freedom? Freedom is a slippery concept, said Anker, an associate professor of political science at George Washington University and author of Ugly Freedoms. I mean, this is a professor. She teaches at George Washington University. And she's talking about these ugly protests for freedom. Freedom from mandates. It says on the far right, individual freedom is often translated into somebody who refuses to be bound by norms of equality, treating all people equally, or norms to remedy inequality, whether that's trying to remedy racial discrimination or gender discrimination. Ah, yes. These are good social justice warriors. And they're prepared to crack down on freedom if it means you're on the other side politically. Then they're anti-freedom. They're against freedom. Or they're going to try to define it in some way it justifies their crackdown. Listen to that. Well, let me just read this first. I'll play you a clip from Trudeau in just a second. But he sent out this letter to premiers just yesterday. And he said here, we're seeing activity that is a threat to our democracy, and that's undermining the public's trust in our institutions. It's exactly what they said about January 6th. Anyone that would support Trump, you just heard it from Donnie Deutsch. It's a threat to democracy. If Trump gets back in, that's it. It's over. Because he's Hitler, right? And his supporters are Nazis. And they want freedom. And that's dangerous. Are you following? Says here in it, the government said the protests, quote, have become a rallying point for anti-government and anti-authority, anti-vaccination, conspiracy theory, and white supremacist groups throughout Canada and other Western countries. These people are anti-government. So what do we have to do? We have to suspend civil liberties and declare martial law and basically anoint a dictator to crack down. And that's what's happened in Canada. It's unbelievable. The protesters have varying ideological grievances, with demands ranging from an end to all public health restrictions and the overthrow of the elected government. Yeah, they're trying to overthrow the government, says the prime minister who just overthrew the government on Monday. Can you believe this? Listen to what the prime minister said. This is, firstly, it's a Jewish MP as she gets up to criticize the prime minister. And then listen closely to the response of Justin Trudeau. Clip 3.
If Canadians are to trust their government needs to trust Canadians. Those are the words of the Prime Minister in 2015. These people, very often misogynistic, racist, women haters, science deniers, the fringe. Same Prime Minister 6 years later as he fans the flames of an unjustified national emergency. So, Mr. Speaker, when did the Prime Minister lose his way? When did it happen?
You're right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, Conservative Party members can stand with people who wave swastikas. They can stand with people who wave the Confederate flag. We will choose to stand with Canadians who deserve to be able to get to their jobs, who be able to get their lives back. These illegal protests need to stop, and they will, Mr. Speaker.
You can hear some of them in the opposition saying, how dare you? How dare you say we're siding with the swastikas? As I said earlier this week, I forget the article, we went through it. Just the shameful coverage coming from the Canadian media, the American media, as they have searched far and wide to find a swastika. You notice you never see the picture of this. Or the Confederate flag. When you do look at pictures or video images or video B-roll footage, there's just thousands and thousands of Canadian flags. But if you see one swastika, if you see one Trump flag, if you see one Confederate flag, then they've got their narrative. And this is the second coming of Adolf Hitler and all of the Nazis who want to... They want to fight for freedom. And the CBC helpfully explaining what that really means, how dangerous that really is. Well, there's quite a few. This prime minister got quite the blowback for those comments there, particularly when making them to this Jewish woman who, as I understand it, she's family with Holocaust survivors. And there's the Prime Minister of Canada saying she's siding with the swastikas, the people waving swastika flags, which don't exist, by the way, but we'll just play along. There's swastikas all over the streets, and she, this Jewish woman, is on the side of the Nazis. Listen to this response to the Prime Minister's remarks. This comes from Conservative Dane Lloyd. Yesterday in Parliament as well. Clip 11.
Mr. Speaker, I've never seen such shameful and dishonorable remarks coming from this Prime Minister. My great-grandfather flew over 30 missions over Nazi Germany. My great-great-uncle's body lies at the bottom of the English Channel. There are members of this Conservative caucus who are the descendants of victims of the Holocaust. For the Prime Minister to accuse any colleague in this House of standing with the swastika is shameful. I'm giving the Prime Minister an opportunity. I'm calling on him to unreservedly apologize for this shameful remark.
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, Canadians deserve their freedoms back. Mr. Speaker, these illegal blockades that have continued to interfere with people's livelihoods.
It's not going to apologize. No way. This is war. These are two prophecies, Antiochus and Jeroboam, and you're seeing it more clearly every day. The war between these two parties. And neither side's going to give in. Well, if anything, the conservatives are usually ones who compromise and surrender more as a group, but at least with Jeroboam, there's a warring spirit, there's a fight, there's courage, there's faith to some degree. Two movements, and it's not just the United States, as I've been saying. Listen to this from the New Zealand Prime Minister. This was earlier this week as well, clip 4.
But what we've seen out there, I have to say, seems much more anti-vaccination more than anything else. It's included yelling abuse at people who are walking around with masks on, occupying spaces where businesses are operating, blocking people's ability to move around freely. That is moving beyond a protest. In fact, to me, it looks like an imported style of protest that I have not seen in New Zealand before, complete with Trump flags and Canadian flags.
Oh, no, Trump flags. And now the Canadian flags. You see, the truckers, they're flying the Canadian flags. That's making its way to New Zealand. And then there's Trump. He's always at the center of it. Whether it's Ottawa or Wellington, wherever. And notice, how rich is it for these communists to say, hey, these protests are blocking people's ability to move around freely. This woman is the queen of blockades. She's the queen of lockdowns. She is the queen of you shut yourself in the basement of your house and don't move. Do not leave. And now she's worried about the freedom that people have to move about in their nation because the blockades or the protesters are blocking free movement. They're out there protesting. Mandates coming from women like this, coming from prime ministers like this. They were doing the, I forget that Maori dance, what it's called. That was around the capital of New Zealand. It's a populist uprising, and it's again, it's two sides, very clearly. Two prophecies to think on. Jeroboam, Antiochus. It really, I mean, more and more, when you start hearing Trump, he comes up in Wellington, he comes up in Ottawa, he comes up in interviews with the CBC. It just confirms everything you've been hearing on this program and reading in the Trumpet magazine about who Donald Trump is, about this prophecy regarding Jeroboam and how significant this prophecy is with respect to end time events. In our nations, the nations of Israel, the United States, Britain, Canada, New Zealand, Australia. Listen again to this exchange that Ardern has with a journalist down in New Zealand, clip 5.
But I would just note that it has been a protest with constant noise, constant music and speaking and quite threatening behavior.
Constant noise? So we're going to have to declare an Emergencies Act. I mean, she hasn't done this to this point in New Zealand. But the noise, it's very, very concerning. And there's always, always, always the threat of violence. Anytime you've got a Trump flag, I mean, there's the threat of violence. Yes, there's some noise. There's some dancing. There's some chanting. But and no violence yet, but the threat. That's enough. I mean, we just really haven't seen anything like this. I mean, it's just ridiculous on its face, particularly when you compare it to 2020, the summer of love, when people like this woman were cheering along mayhem and violence on a mass scale. One last exchange. Listen to this. This is a fairly good journalist, at least pushing back a bit. Clip 6.
And there is an element of anti-vaccination, but there is also a group there who are representing people who have lost their jobs, who are just angry at the vaccine mandates. Do you feel the appropriate way to deal with those people is to spray water on them?
You think it's right to pull out the fire hose and to hose down the crowd who are out there saying, can you lift the mandates? Is that an appropriate response? And of course, her response to that is, well, now I'm not going to get into police tactics here. But look, they're a threat. They are a threat. There's a Trump flag. I mean, there's a Trump flag there. Did I mention that there's a Trump flag? Following up on yesterday, well, really all week, this scandal, Hillary Clinton, who had no response when confronted by the Daily Mail. And then now she's finally come out and responded to John Durham's investigation and the revelation from last Friday that Hillary's people, with the support and help of Obama, here's Antiochus yet again, And of course, Jeroboam. He was the one being spied upon. Hillary responded. This is from Fox News. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton reacted to John Durham's latest filing, criticizing former President Trump and Fox News for, quote, desperately spinning up a fake scandal to distract from the real ones. Okay, well, let's see. Let's see how this plays out. If Durham's got the goods, and he wouldn't be writing this in a court filing if he didn't have some evidence to back it up. So we'll see. It says the former 2016 Democratic presidential nominee tweeted Wednesday in her first public statement, reacting to Durham's February 11 federal court filing. It says Trump and Fox are desperately spinning up a fake scandal to distract from the real ones. So it's a day that ends in Y. I mean, this is just happening all the time. Trump, Trump, Trump. If Trump says it, it must be a lie, says Hillary Clinton. If Trump says it, if Trump supports it, the opposite is true because he's Hitler. He's Hitler. He comes back in. If he's voted back in, that's the it. That, I mean, that's the end. Hillary pointed to this Vanity Fair article, short little article that supposedly debunks everything that John Durham is uncovering. Listen to this from Don Jr., Donald Trump's son. He's commenting or making the point that we made yesterday with respect to the near blackout of media coverage on this. Or if they do talk about it, like you heard yesterday, they're basically saying, look, if you believe anything that Durham uncovers, you're stupid. You're just too stupid to really understand what's going on in this world. Here's Don Jr., clip 7.
Where's Bob Woodward? Because I heard every time my father put out a tweet for the last 5 years, it's worse than Watergate. Well, this actually is worse than Watergate, and yet all of those clowns are strangely silent, just like our media, because they can't run cover for this. They know they've been caught, just like they're running cover for Justin Trudeau. And rather than talking about him acting like a despot and a tyrant, they're so busy doxing people who donated $40 to the Freedom Convoy and to the truckers in Canada actually fighting for freedom. That's how sick, that's how discredited our mainstream media is right now.
It's exactly the point we made yesterday. They're complicit. They're conspirators. They're part of the attack. They're there to cover for Trudeau and for Obama and for fake Joe Biden or the fake president. The Epoch Times says the fact that the February 9 allegations included information gleaned from Trump's White House DNS traffic should have alerted the intelligence community that the allegations originated with Joff. So he's the guy that heads up that tech firm in Georgia, Joff. This is the third party that was spying on internet traffic in the White House, when Donald Trump was president. This is war, you see. It's Jeroboam and Antiochus. Over and again, we see this. It says, this matter is particularly unsettling. If the FBI or CIA became aware that the data had originated with Joff, it would seem equally likely that they would have been aware of the manner by which Joff came by the data. So Joff was hired to create this narrative, to spy and then to try to find something, and if he couldn't find anything incriminating, to create this narrative that Trump, Russia, collusion is what won the presidency for Donald Trump in 2016. So he creates this narrative, he gives it over to the lawyers at Perkins Coie, Sussman and company. And then they give it to the FBI and the CIA. They were all in it together. And the Epoch Times is here saying that if the FBI got it from Sussman, and okay, they knew the connection there with Hillary Clinton. They knew there was political opposition research going on. But with serious charges such as this, and then they realize it comes from Joff, this third party. Did that not send up any red flags in the FBI, in the CIA? It says here, the fact that the FBI and CIA apparently weren't disturbed by Joff's access and his efforts to exploit that access for political purposes is equally alarming. I mean, that's a nice way of saying that the FBI and the CIA, they're all part of the problem. They're all part of the sickness. They're all part of the corruption. What did Don Jr. say about the media? How discredited and sick they are. It's the same with these alphabet agencies. It's the same with the CIA and the FBI. It's sick. It's Isaiah 1. It's a sickness from head to toe. Of course, the FBI and the CIA allowed this to happen. Thought nothing of Joff as a third party spying on the White House because they wanted to bring down Trump too. Barack Obama's federal agencies, he weaponized all of them. Here again, Antiochus. His vow coming in, remember, 2008, to fundamentally transform the United States. That transformation is continuing to this day. And we're seeing it not just in America, but in all of the Israelite nations. Britain, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa. Oh, yes. Jen Psaki was asked about this bombshell. Yesterday, the Durham bombshell, she has no comment. Her assistant, I think she was asked the day before, no comment. Oh, ask the DOJ. They can answer questions on this. Victor Davis Hanson, he did a pretty good job on Fox yesterday just summarizing this scandal. And the queen of scandals, that would be Hillary Clinton. Listen to this take, clip 9.
I don't think the nation is going to be so forgiving because it's got the same modus operandi as the Steele dossier. She used the same firewalls to hide her own culpability and pain. She was the paymaster, after all, the DNC and then the Perkins Coie. Same idea. And then Sussman's job, apparently, was to seed all of this, along with Mark Elias, perhaps, to the FBI and the CIA. Now, had that happened maybe 10 years ago, we would be shocked and that can't be possible. But now we're looking at this evidence in light of the careers of Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, James Comey, Andrew McCabe, and it seems very likely that the CIA and the FBI would be very receptive given that they had been weaponized. And then because it's Hillary Clinton, it's ultimately going to be a political matter. And when you look at that, I don't know what her shelf life is on scandals, but there's 30 years of Travelgate, the Rose Law Firm documents, cattle futures, emails, the dossier, etc. And at some point, people will conclude, we gave this exemption, no more. But I think a lot of people feel that Hillary Clinton is an old master of scandal, and this is her greatest masterpiece.
For sure. For sure. I mean, these are people that have been caught up in scandalous behavior and activity for decades. And now the greatest masterpiece of all, to use the agencies of government, to use the intelligence community in the United States government, to use this massive, massive apparatus, not to try to get terrorists abroad, but to try to target political opponents at home. This is her masterpiece. And as I said yesterday, she couldn't have done it without Barack Obama and the deep state. And you look at how Obama was scurrying to get everything in place. The dossier, Jim Comey, the special investigation, even COVID. You look at how he removed any restrictions that there were between communicating between all these government agencies because they had to spread the information around. Look, Trump was coming in. The deep state had to get prepared for that. They had to continue with the spying operation. They were spying even into the Trump administration. It's not something that stopped on January 20th, 2017. It continued. FISA application after FISA application, four times. And as Hansen brings out, 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, you would have thought, no, of course this is not going on. Of course the federal government's not going to spy upon its own people. But when you think about Jim Comey, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Andy McCabe, Jim Clapper, John Brennan, who voted for communists in 1976, of course this was going on. And of course, it's been going on for years. It's at its high watermark because of all the work Barack Obama put in during his 8 years. And you saw what it did in the 4 years of Donald Trump and what it continues to do to vilify Donald Trump, all things Trump, and to create these false narratives all over the place, in Canada, in Ottawa, in Wellington, in New Zealand, in Australia, in Britain, and in the United States as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Send us some feedback. We appreciate your emails, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
This morning in Principles of Living class, we went through this article from our magazine, The Trumpet. If you're not a subscriber to The Trumpet magazine, it's offered free without cost or obligation. Just call our operators today and request a one-year subscription to The Trumpet magazine. It's tomorrow's news today. It really does give you some insights into what will happen in the weeks, months, years ahead. The toll-free number, 1-866-930-3024. So this article, it's titled Sexual Health, What Every High School and College Student Needs to Know. It's written by Joel Hilliker, and as I say, it's from 2007. So we're looking at an article that's 15 years old, and something just jumped out at me as I was going through some of these statistics with our freshmen here at God's College. And Mr. Hilliker, in his article, is just trying to give them truth, statistics that are either not covered or covered up by the medical community or by educators, the experts. He says here, one quarter of sexually active teens contract a sexually transmitted disease. Teenage girls are over three times more likely to feel depressed a lot, most, or all of the time if they're sexually active, and almost three times more likely to have attempted suicide, according to one study. Teenage boys are eight times more likely to try to kill themselves if they are sexually active. So these are some sobering statistics that young people need before they decide to become sexually active. Right? Now, are they getting this from their parents or from educators? It's just, in most cases, it's just the opposite. As educators today are encouraging promiscuity, even with these many bad side effects, even with the risk of getting a sexually transmitted disease. Well, just use prophylactics or something. Problem solved. Does it really solve the problem? Says here, the risks associated with early sex experience are many, and the younger it begins, the higher the risks. It boosts the probability of unmarried pregnancy and abortion, births and single parenthood, and poverty among mothers and children. The danger of infection by STDs is higher not only because of increased exposure, but also because of the biological susceptibility of less mature sex organs. It says, at the same time, early sex experience is proven to lower happiness and decrease the odds of later marital stability. So these are all things that you would think Well, we want to get this information into the hands of all of our teenagers, all of our children, all of our young people, right? Wrong. If you're an educator, these are the things you hide from them. Just show them the Hollywood movie that shows that, hey, a torrid romance or love affair, it's the best. It's perfect. There's nothing that could go wrong. It says, what makes this tragedy more and more more than merely sad, what makes it truly outrageous and angering is the fact that these students are, at least in part, acting in ignorance, having been deliberately fed false information that obscures how destructive their behavior really is. Big part of the problem here, besides parental authority and administering law and government in your home, a big part of the problem is educators spreading misinformation. We hear about that a lot today, do we not? All the time. It says here, unscrupulous educators, people more committed to politically correct principles of sexual freedom than to protecting our youth, are suppressing solid scientific evidence, damning facts that might endanger their own perverse social agendas. You see, when it comes down to it, it's always, always, always about promoting an agenda, not the truth, not the truth, not the facts. And you've heard this a lot in the first segment of this show, day in, day out. The agenda is all important. As I was reading this morning, I thought, well, boy, here in the last 2 years, you see all of this propaganda. You see all of the lies about COVID, about the vaccine. The vaccine figures, by the way, from last week, updated. The last week, there were 1 million more reports, or 15,000 more added to the 1,100,000. 466 more deaths because of the vaccine, bringing the total to 23,615 dying because of the vaccine. And of course, that's got to be blotted out. We want to bury that as deeply into the CDC website as possible so that you can't get to the truth, or that it's just very, very difficult. And then if you promote it, if you broadcast it, well, we'll probably just take down your social media site. As I was reading this morning, this is an article from 2007. It just kind of dawned on me that this is not a problem, spreading propaganda and misinformation. It's certainly, certainly intensified in the last 2 years. And you see the war, as I said in the first segment, between Jeroboam and Antiochus. You see it through and through. It's every part of these stories, these news events that we're talking about. But this push, this perverse social agenda that just needs to be rammed down the throats of our young people. I mean, the same people that are saying, yeah, sexual freedom for all, no harm, no harm at all. These same authorities that are out promoting that are simultaneously saying, put a mask on that 5-year-old, put a mask on that 7-year-old. And then they promote sexual promiscuity. They have a hand in the spread of deadly sexually transmitted diseases. Yes, they do. And yet they present themselves as being so concerned about the children. We just have to protect the children, the least vulnerable group with respect to COVID. But now what about some of these diseases discussed in Mr. Hilliker's article here? He refers to this book, by the way, called Unprotected. And you know who it's written by? This is an article from 2007, so the book's fairly old. It's written by anonymous MD. It's written by an Ivy League educated MD, a doctor, someone from the medical profession, who writes a book about the truth and has to leave his byline out of it. Otherwise, he gets blotted out. I assume it's a he. I don't know. Maybe it's a she. But if he doesn't present it anonymously, he's erased. See, that's spirit. To blot out the truth. It's been around for a long time, hasn't it? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, it's especially strong, that spirit, here in these last couple years. But Satan and his demons have been cast down to this earth. And they are the author. The devil is the author of lies and murder. That spirit is everywhere. Well, I won't get into all the detail from Mr. Hilliker's article, but he says here, unprotected, that's the book he quotes by this anonymous doctor, unprotected also speaks of another unmentionable problem in today's universities, the pain, particularly emotional, suffered by women who decide to abort their babies, and even the men who fathered those babies. Healthcare professionals patently deny the painful facts. The painful facts associated with abortion. 1 million babies per year are aborted here in the United States of America. And you have companies or these abortion mills like Planned Parenthood out there promoting it and then lying at the same time. They lie about it. I mean, Planned Parenthood, they get government funding. They're promoted by the U.S. government, have been for decades. And you see Dr. Lena Wen, she's on CNN. She used to head up Planned Parenthood. And, I mean, she's a very trusted source when it comes to health, the health of our nation. There's a quote in this article. Planned Parenthood dismisses abortion trauma as a non-existent phenomenon. There's no dangerous side effects. There's no trauma, nothing associated with abortion. Abortion is good, say the experts. And then it quotes Planned Parenthood, says that women consider it a maturing experience. Listen to this quote. I read it again. I read it to the students. I'll read it to you right now. I still cannot believe that this is what Planned Parenthood would say about the process of abortion. Women who have had one abortion do not suffer adverse psychological effects. In fact, as a group, they have higher self-esteem, greater feelings of worth and capableness, and fewer feelings of failure than do women who have had no abortions. Can you believe this? This is an old quote. This is from a 2007 article. And this is Planned Parenthood saying, hey, if you have an abortion as a young lady, if you have 2, 3, 4 abortions, you're going to be smarter. You're going to be happier. You're going to have it together. More so than those prudes that don't get their abortions. It's a complete and total lie. They lie, you see. They love abortions. They love promoting abortions. It's a cash cow for the abortion mills. They slaughter human beings. They bring you into Planned Parenthood. They don't want you to see an ultrasound. They don't want you to see any kind of an x-ray. They don't want you to see anything moving. They don't want you to see life inside of the mother's belly, inside of the womb. They just say, hey, it's kind of a blob of cells, and we'll get it out of you. No problem. No, don't look at the ultrasound. We don't want to actually see what's going on. We don't actually want to see the pain. Speaking of the emotional trauma, what about the pain for the little baby, the unborn child? All of that goes on, and all of it's carefully concealed and covered up because they lie to you. They say things like, hey, if you do this, if you abort this baby, if you kill this fetus, then you are going to have greater feelings of worth and capableness. It's sick. It's sick. This is Satan's world. This is not God's world. This is the devil's world. God's world, however, is coming right at the conclusion of this wonderful article. And it is a wonderful article. It exposes the truth. It teaches young people. And it says here at the end about Herbert W. Armstrong College and what happens on this campus and how our young people are taught to live their lives, to prepare for marriage and family. Mr. Hilliker says the students here date and date a lot, but they date around. School policy forbids exclusive dating until just before a student graduates. Sexual activity is forbidden. This means that these students' education isn't befouled by distracting and destructive trysts and dangerous experimental behavior. The students are free to develop strong friendships with all different ones, free to enjoy and develop their personalities through regular dates with dozens of people of the opposite sex, absolutely free of the depression, diseases, and pressures associated with unmarried sex. It says, as a result, they're happier, more carefree, and better able to concentrate on the education they come here to receive. Now, that's the truth. That's the truth. And yet educators, experts, people in the medical profession, MDs, they would look at this and say, how cruel could you be to enforce these kinds of rules at a college? Well, the fruits of both ways of life. It tells you all that you need to know. We've got the laws, the commandments of God, and we've got evidence. We've got fruits to back it up. 1 Corinthians 6. Notice what the Apostle Paul says, verse 15. Know you not that your bodies are the members of Christ? Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them the members of an harlot? God forbid. Well, God says, I don't want you to join with a harlot. I don't want you to become one flesh with a harlot. I want you to prepare for marriage and family. Marriage and family are of God. Verse 16, it says, what, know you not that he which is joined to an harlot is one body? For two, says he, shall be one flesh. But he that is joined unto the Lord is one spirit. Verse 18, it says, flee fornication. Flee from it. Run away from it. Stay away from it. Don't trust yourself. Be like Joseph with Potiphar's wife. She wanted to seduce him. She wanted to commit adultery with him. And Joseph did not want to sin against God. And so he ran. He didn't trust himself. He didn't hang around the sin. He didn't hang around the edge of a cliff. He ran away from it. He stayed away from the sin. And that's what we teach. That's what we teach all the members of the Church of God. That's what we teach our young people. That's what we teach our children. That's what we teach the students here at Armstrong College, here at the Imperial Academy. And it works. It works. You have beautiful marriages, weddings like we've just had here, a couple in the last few weeks, families, children. Children brought up in the way that they should go, in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, as Paul wrote. And obviously, they're not getting, if they do it right, they're not getting the STDs. They're not basically sentencing these children to a life without a father. Abortions aren't happening. Now look, people make mistakes. Sometimes people sin. Even in the church, we sin and we need to repent of it and come back and get right with God. But this is the way to do it. We have to purify ourselves as God is pure. The goal is perfection. The goal is to be like the Father. Verse 19, it says, what? Know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit which is in you, which you have of God, and you are not your own? For you are bought with a price. Therefore, verse 20, therefore glorify God in your body. Glorify God in your body and in your spirit, or the human spirit, which are God's. Bring glory to God in the way that you live your physical life. Bought with a price. Serve God. Paul said, I've been crucified with Christ, yet I live. And it's not I, it's Jesus Christ living in me. That's the goal. For Jesus to live out his life again in our bodies and minds. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.